The following audio is from the weekly message at Summit Church in the upstate of South Carolina. More information is available at summitupstate.org.
Well, good morning. I want to welcome you, those of you who are new, those of you who are from new faces to familiar faces. Welcome to Summit. Welcome to a new year. My name is Terry Carlton. I serve as one of the pastors on the team here, and I'll add my happy new year as well. I hope the first few days of 2025 have been kind to you, and I'm really grateful this first Sunday of the year to open up God's word with you. I do want to briefly just thank you for your generosity in helping us close out 2024. When we got to the first Sunday in December, we were about $150,000 behind budget. And then about 4 days before the new year, we had, you along with us, closed that gap to about $23,000. And I don't have the final word yet, but I'm pretty confident we ended 2024 in an incredibly strong way. So I just want to thank you for your generosity, and we are excited about updating you on where we officially landed, hopefully next Sunday, but if not, in the next couple weeks. And then the last Sunday of this month, we're going to present 2025 budget to you. So we'll celebrate together, and then we'll ask the Lord to keep using us to live with open hands this year together. Because of the Lord's great love, we are not consumed, for his compassions never fail. They are new every morning. Great is his faithfulness. My daughter loves that verse. I love that verse. I'm sure many of you love that verse. But every time she prays, she ends by expressing gratitude that every new day brings brand new mercy, brand new compassion, brand new expression and experiences of God's steadfast love that is tailor-made specifically just for her, just for me, just for you. God shows up every single morning with new mercy. Not to just simply get us through our day. No, but to capture our hearts with his unfailing love, while his all-sufficient mercy carries us along each and every moment of our day. Here's how my daughter will often express her gratitude. She'll say it like this: thank you for the mercy that will be waiting on us in the morning. Thank you for the mercy and love that will find us when we awake tomorrow. Now, here's what strikes me about the way she prays this prayer. She prays this prayer in the morning. Like on the way to school, we have a rhythm of praying together. And she will say, thank you, Lord, for the mercy that will find us when we awake tomorrow. And she's been praying this way for a couple years. Now, initially, I thought to myself, why are you already praying for tomorrow? Like, the day's just begun. But I let it go, kept it to myself, and then, sure enough, day after day, she prays this way. It's those kinds of phrases that ends her prayer every time. Then it dawned on me that she is praying each morning thinking about the next, because she's already trusting that his mercy has found her on this day. She's going about her day as though God's already got me today. And so she's anticipating tomorrow. After she's going to live this day, and she's going to lie down to sleep on this night, and she's going to awake tomorrow, here's what she's believing: that she gets to begin again. She gets to be found again. She gets to be swallowed up by mercy and grace again. Now, full disclosure, she didn't understand all of that. But can I clue you in on something this first Sunday of 2025? Neither do you and I. Neither do we. I mean, how many times this past year have we wrestled with the notion that God's merciful love, it never ceases, it never runs dry? Let alone living out our days confident that we'll awake tomorrow with sure confidence that his merciful love won't dry up or be lacking in any way. So here we are at the dawn of a new year, full of expectation or not, full of anticipation or little anticipation, full of hope or hardly any, eager to embrace what this year has in store. Or perhaps you sit here this morning and you sit here in the reality that you walk into 2025 with a limp, an ache, with scars from the previous year. And I just want to say to you that however you enter into this year, and wherever you find yourself to be this morning, even if you don't know where you are this morning, here's what I want to speak over us this morning. Here's what I think you and I can learn from a childlike, faith-filled prayer such as today: I'm banking on the mercy that will also capture me in the morning. That wherever you are today, right now, you can begin again. And again tomorrow. And again the day after. And again, and again, and again. I love the first couple Sundays of January because we set aside as a leadership team just a couple weeks to just share a heart with you. It gives us an opportunity to express how we are praying for you, for us, as a church. So I get prayer number one for us this year. And I'll be honest with you, this one feels a little bit different for me. And I think it feels a little bit different as I was looking back at notes from the last 3 or 4 years of these prayers that we have done. And this one feels different because it really is the overflow where I'm at personally. And I think that's always true. Like, I think we stand up here, I think it's mostly true of our guys on most Sundays. I think we try to speak from the overflow of where we are and what God's doing in our life. But I'll also be honest with you, it's easier to care about your soul than it is my own. You okay with that honesty? And so what I want you to know with what I'm going to share with you today, it's just where I'm at. It's what I'm praying for my own heart. And because I'm praying it for me, I'm praying it for you. I want it to become increasingly true of my life in 2025, and I want it to become increasingly true of your life as well. So if you have a Bible, Psalm 86 is where we're going to be for a few moments. Psalm 86. And here is the simple way that I am praying for me, for you, this year. That we will begin again with him. That's my prayer. That we will begin again with him. To begin again is to start where you are. It's to name where you are. It begins with honesty. Where are you? Where am I? To begin again is to take a step. It's to take your next step, even if you don't currently desire to take a step. One writer puts it this way: new life always starts in the dark. Whether it's a seed in the ground, a baby in the womb, or Jesus in the tomb, new life, new possibility, it always begins in the dark. So to begin again is invitational. Wherever you are, you can begin again there. To begin again is also to resist complacency. The truth is, every one of us who sit in this room today, we're all in process. Man, and some of you sit here this morning and you're in a really great spot, namely with your relationship with Jesus. And I praise God for that reality this morning. But here's what I want to speak to you. If you find yourself at the start of a new year and you're in a sweet spot with your relationship with the Lord, I want to encourage you to know and to remember and to believe He's not finished with you. He's still working, growing, maturing you. And I want to encourage those of us that are in this room that we just feel like we're in a good spot. Don't settle just because you have been journeying with the Lord for a certain amount of years. Each new day is an opportunity to anticipate His mercy and unfailing love in ways that you have yet to discover. To begin again is to resist the notion that he's finished with me or that I've arrived. No one's arrived. We're still in process. So no matter where you are or how you enter into this new year, always we begin again. What does that mean? It means that grace is always available. Always. And there's never a moment that we don't need His grace. Mercy is always available. And we need it every second of every day. Every moment, every day, there's always the possibility to begin again. Now here's the key with Him. With Him. If you've been journeying with the Lord for any length of time, here's one of the temptations. The temptation is life with God can somehow shift to life for God or life because of God or life in addition to God. Like we can journey with Him for a season and maybe that season is years. And somewhere along the way, and we often don't realize it, the shift occurs where the primary way we relate to God is what we can do for Him. Like good things, spiritual things, like reading our Bible and prayer, that this breath that Jared's talking about, the breathing, and attending and participating in corporate worship and serving Him. All of those things can become things that we do for Him while we live our life ahead of Him. Like living out our vision, running after our ambitions, and we get ahead of God, so to speak. And the idea or the reality of with Him becomes just a distant memory. My prayer for my own life and yours this year is that we will begin again with Him. With Him. Jesus in John chapter 7. We're going to Psalm 86 after this. I'm going to give you a little bit of context to my prayer. Jesus in John chapter 7, He's standing in the middle of the marketplace and He declares these words to the crowds.
If anyone thirsts, if anyone's thirsty, let them come to me and drink. Now, he's declaring this statement on the last day of just a monumental feast. And here's Jesus in the middle of this jubilant crowd of people declaring that he is the object of humanity's deepest desire and longing. He's saying that to a group of people who had everything within their reach to satisfy them. Bread, wine, relationships. And yet Jesus is reminding them, I'm the only one that can satisfy you. So come to me. Come be with me. And then he makes this statement in John 7. For from within you will flow rivers of living water. Brothers and sisters, the pinnacle truth of the gospel is that through Christ, we are brought into relationship with God, with him. To live life, all of it, with him. Oh, be assured, it's for him. But it is first and always with him. With him. What if in the midst of the noise and the ache or even the numbness of where you might be and the expectation. What if the singular conscious step this year was to begin again with him? Well, if we're going to take that step, then that step requires us to open ourselves up to God, to open ourselves up to him. This is where we begin. And this brings us to Psalm 86. In Psalm 86, David is going to show us how to bring our true self before the Lord. I'm going to read the first 15 verses. I want you to follow along. And I want you to pay really close attention to four things as we walk through the movement of these 15 verses. I want you to pay close attention to thoughts, emotions, desires, and choices. I want you to pay attention to what does David think? What does David feel? What does David want? And then what does David do? Verse 1, Psalm 86. Incline your ear, O Lord, and answer me. For I am poor and needy. Preserve my life, for I'm godly and faithful. Save your servant who trusts in you. You are my God. David's in a really tough predicament circumstantially. He's running for his life. Things are not great for David. David's coming into a new year limping. That's David's scenario. Be gracious to me, verse 3, O Lord. For to you do I cry all the day. Gladden the soul of your servant, for to you, O Lord, do I lift my soul. For you, O Lord, are good and forgiving, abounding in steadfast love to all who call upon you. Give ear, O Lord, to my prayer. Listen to my plea for grace. In the day of my trouble, I call upon you, for you answer me. There's no one like you among the gods, O Lord, nor are there any works like yours. All the nations you have made shall come and worship before you, O Lord, and shall glorify your name, for you are great and you do wondrous things. You alone are God. Teach me your way, O Lord, that I may walk in your truth. Now notice this next line. Unite my heart to fear your name. I give thanks to you, O Lord, my God, with my whole heart. And I glorify your name forever, for great is your steadfast love towards me. You have delivered my soul from the depths of Sheol. Oh God, insolent men have risen up against me. A band of ruthless men seeks my life, and they do not set you before them. But you, O Lord, are a God merciful and gracious, slow to anger, and abounding in steadfast love and faithfulness. David's heart is divided. Unite my heart, Lord. Stitch my heart back together to fear your name. His heart's divided. When the Bible talks about the heart, it is referring to the central control system of our lives. It's the very essence of what defines us. So when you read heart, 99.9% of the time, it's talking about your thoughts, your emotions, your desires, and your choices. All of you, what makes you, you. David says, my heart's not whole, it's divided, but I'm going to give you my whole heart. God, would you take what is divided within me and make me whole? I want to just point out two observations from this psalm and how I think David begins again with the Lord. And then I'm going to invite us to do that together. Number one, observation one, he names what is true. He names what is true. First of all, what is true about God? It's all over the text, but I'll mention it to you and we'll move quickly through it. Verse 5, David says, "For you, O Lord, are good and forgiving, abounding in steadfast love." Verse 8, "There's no one like you among the gods." No one's like you. Verse 9, "All the nations that you have made are going to come and worship before you." Verse 10, "You are great. You do wondrous things. You alone are God." Verse 13, "You're great. And the greatness is your steadfast love is towards me. You've delivered my soul from the depths of Sheol." Verse 15, "You, Lord, are a God merciful and gracious." All throughout this prayer, David is appealing to God's steadfast love based on how God has shown his love in the past. David is naming what is true about God by going back to the character of God to inform his life in the present. He's naming what is true. But he also names what is true about himself. Look at verse 1. I'm poor and needy. I have nothing without you. That's the opening declaration of verse 1, right, of this psalm. I have nothing without you. Verse 2, he says, "Lord, I've been faithful. You're the one that I put my trust in." Verse 3, "I cry out to you. I'm dependent upon you." Verse 7, "In my trouble, I call out to you." Verse 12, "I give thanks to you. My heart is filled with gratitude towards you." Verse 14, "These evil men that have risen up against me, I don't know what to do. I'm afraid." We didn't read these verses, but verse 16, he says, "Turn to me and be gracious again, Lord. I don't have the strength." Verse 17, "Show me your favor. You alone comfort me." Do you see what's happening? David's thoughts are rising to the surface. They're not just sitting in the quiet recesses of his mind and heart. His thoughts aren't just being suppressed by busying himself with more to do or more work or numbing it in a multitude of other ways. They're not being downplayed. They're being spoken aloud to God. And in that active step of faith, it is exposing to David what he is thinking and what he is feeling. What he's thinking and feeling about God and himself. Notice the distinction between what he thinks, his thoughts, and what he feels. Verse 1 and 2, he says, "Incline your ear, answer me, preserve my life, save me." What do you think he's feeling? I think he's desperate, right? Verses 3 and 4, he says, be gracious to me. I pray to you all day. Make my soul glad. What do you think he's feeling? David's sad. Verses 6 and 7, give ear to my prayer. Listen to my plea. In my trouble, I call to you. What do you think he's feeling? Well, I think he's stressed. Verses 8 through 10, all nations, even my enemies, will one day glorify you. You see a feeling of clinging to hope. Verse 11, he's afraid. Verse 12, he's filled with gratitude. Verse 14, he's full of anxiety. You see him going back and forth. Verse 17, he's at peace. And you go, well, what's the big deal? Well, David's putting it all on the table before God. That's the big deal. He's bearing his soul before the Lord. He's saying, Lord, here's where my head's at. Here's where my heart's at. I trust that you care. I trust that you're near. He names what's true. He names what's true. Second observation, he surrenders his way. He surrenders his way. Now, David doesn't surrender voicing his desire to the Lord. Is this really key? Like, he wants to be heard. How many of you want that when you call out to God? Don't you want to be heard? So he's not surrendering being honest before the Lord. He wants the Lord to answer his prayer. He wants to be protected. He wants God to be merciful to him. He wants help. He wants strength. He wants comfort. And really, you can see it all across the first seven verses. His desires become more intense. But something happens in verse 8. David takes a breath, pauses, and reflects on the goodness of God. Look at it with me one more time. There's none like you. Among all the other imposters, there's none like you, O Lord. Nor are there any works like yours. All the nations that you have made, they're all going to come and worship before you and bow down. Righteousness and peace. This will glorify your name. For you are great and do wondrous things. You alone are God. He expresses his thoughts and feelings before God. He takes a breath, reflects on the character of God, the goodness of God, the nature of God, and then something changes. Look at verse 11. Teach me your way. Teach me your way, O Lord, because I want to walk in your truth. I want to walk in your path. And I want you to unite my heart, make my heart one to fear your name. Do you see it? There's longing, a pause, reflection on the goodness of God, and then his longings change. Lord, I want a renewed mind. Would you teach me your truth? Lord, I want to be well acquainted with the path you walk. I want your way to be my way. I want to walk your path with you. I want you to walk your way with me. Even if it means that my enemies continue to chase after me, even if it means that your way is through the wilderness, I want to go with you. So, Lord, would you take what is divided in my heart and stitch it back together? I surrender my way. Lord, would you give me an undivided heart? Now, pay attention to what happens next. As the Lord is reshaping David's desires and longings, David's decisions come in line with those new desires. It's really important. Verse 12. I give thanks to you, O Lord my God, with my whole heart. And I glorify your name forever. I will give thanks to you. No, granted, nothing's changed about his circumstances. He's still running, afraid for his life. I will give thanks to you, regardless of the future. I'm declaring right now, this day, this moment, my gratitude. That all the days of my life, this is what will be known of me. I will not wait to praise you. I'm not waiting on my circumstances to change. I'm not waiting on the feelings of vitality and vibrancy to worship you. Now, what's interesting to me is that in verse 11, he asked the Lord to give him an undivided heart. And in verse 12, with his divided heart, he still chooses to worship. That's really important. Yet David is actively surrendering his divided heart to the Lord and still choosing to worship. He names what is true. He surrenders his divided heart to the Lord. And then he takes the active step of faith to be with the Lord, to walk with him, to worship him. And this becomes the pathway by which the Lord stitches back together what is divided in David's heart. Brothers and sisters, this is how you and I can begin again with him. With him. Because of the Lord's great love, we are not consumed. Not consumed by our circumstances or our fears. We're not consumed by unmet expectations. We are not consumed by, you fill in the blank. You fill it in. Because of his great love, we are not consumed. Always, always, we begin again. How? By opening ourselves up to God. As we are, right where we are, we give him our divided heart. This one's challenging. You know why? Because it takes honesty on our part. It takes us looking within at the thoughts of our life, the emotions that we feel, the desires that we long for, and the repetitive decisions that we make. It takes us being honest about, are those actually in line with the way of the Lord? It's also challenging because it is surrender. It's surrendering these thoughts and these emotions and these desires and the repetitive decisions of our life to his way, in his timing, in his sovereignty, in his providence. We begin again by opening ourselves up to God, by giving him what is divided. Thoughts, emotions, desires, choices. We open our hands and we offer him the full portion of our heart. And here's what we say. We say, okay, Lord, here it is. Here it is, all of it. I'm divided. Will you put me back together? One heart, one mind, then undivided I will be. And you know what we do? We do that again and again and again and again. And again, and again, and again, we begin again with him. So here's how I want to close our time. I want to close our time by giving you a pathway to do just that. To begin again with him today. I'm going to invite you to close your eyes to try to remove distraction. But here's the first thing that I just want you to think about. I want you to name one area of your heart that feels divided this morning. Just one. The first one that comes to mind. Could be in the thought life, could be in the emotions that you feel, could be in the desires that you long for, could be in the decisions that you're making or have made. One area, name it. Name it before the Lord. Take 10 seconds to do that. Eyes still closed. I want you to open your hands. And here's what I want you to do. I want you to offer that one thing, that one area, that one way. I want you to offer that to the Lord. You go, this feels divided, Lord. I'm going to place it into your hands today, right now. And my request is that you would make it whole. Undivided, it will become, because you're the one that is going to unite it, make it right, make it whole. I'm giving it to you. Take 10 seconds to offer it to him. Last step, I want you to think about one active step of faith that you can begin to take that will bring you closer to the path that he is on. What is one step of faith that will bring you closer to him, with him? As you offer him your heart, as you give back to him the area that is divided, what is one active step of faith that you can give to bring you to him? Take 10 seconds to name it. Because of the Lord's great love, we are not consumed. For his compassions never fail. They are new every morning. Great is his faithfulness. That you and I, today, right now, can begin again with him.
Thank you for joining us for this week's message. Summit Upstate's mission is to give every man, woman, and child repeated opportunities to see, hear, and respond to the gospel. We'd love to connect with you. So we invite you to reach out to us at summitupstate.org.